This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hi, this is Lou Roberts.
This is Tyrese Campbell.
And you're listening to the Every Step Along the Way podcast.
And then welcome back, everybody, to the latest episode of Every Step Along the Way. And it's sort of the last one in 2023 or the first one in 2024, depends when you're listening to us. But yeah, we're going to delve into Stephen Schumacher's fifth unbeaten game so far. Is it a 1-1 draw at Watford? And a man who was there to see it in person after a late dash down to Vicarage Road is you, Michael Stockley. How are you, mate? Did you enjoy your trip down?
Yeah, I did, actually, thank you. It was pretty faultless. Took about pretty much almost bang on 3 hours, actually, to get there on the club coaches, which was pretty decent until the toilet stopped working about an hour into the journey. So people weren't overly impressed because obviously they weren't stopping either. So I think there was a lot of people who were really hanging on towards the end. But yeah, it was good. Thank you, mate. I'd say I wasn't really planning on necessarily going. And then I just had that urge that we've all had just to, why not? Might as well go. I'd say I wasn't really disappointed. I think there was a lot of effort that went in, but we'll get into that. But yeah, how's your week been?
Not too bad. Sort of back to normal how it is, and I'm sort of back in with work and that. But yes, I enjoyed what I saw of the game. Thought it was quite, Watford looked a decent side. I mean, there were no pushovers, really. They had their own threats. I know we'll get into it more in a minute, but yeah, I thought we more than sort of held our own with them. So yeah, good.
Good, mate. Yeah, no, you're right. I think Watford definitely weren't pushovers. We didn't really know which Watford to expect, did we? Let's be honest, because one week they're winning 4-1, next week they're losing 4-1. And I genuinely went there with not a flipping clue what was going to happen. I mean, first observations, actually, you know, which nothing to do with the football, was actually the stadium. It's the first time I've been to Watford. And it was, I'm not sure what the actual attendance possibly is, you know, maximum attendance. I'm not sure what that is, but it feels like a very, like, small stadium is the feeling I got about it. I mean, I'm sure it's probably still 20,000 seats there, no doubt, but it felt very, very cramped, if I'm honest. The concourses are the smallest concourses I've ever come across. Absolutely ridiculous for size in there. But in terms of like the football, I'd say, you know, the team sheet wise was, I think everyone was pretty impressed with it. I can't really think of any major surprises that came from it. I mean, if anything, I probably expected a couple of more changes, more down to fitness more than anything else. But it was a good effort. I think the lads did put an awful lot of effort in. And, you know, again, no doubt we'll talk about the red card shortly, but I don't really think that the red card really affected things too dramatically. If anything, I think we actually looked probably the weaker of the two sides, actually, when we got the 10 men. We didn't really look overly threatening, but I think the first reaction after the game, Dan, was, oh, God, that's 2 points dropped. And I think to a certain extent, yes, it is. But I think you said, like, Watford weren't really any pushovers. They had their own chances. Barnum made that good tip, but you can't really see it from the angle on TV, but the fingertip save to put the, you know, the shot onto the bar. It doesn't look like he does, but he really does get a fingertip on that, which was a really good save from there. You know, they had a couple of chances where we managed to clear a line and stuff. So I'd say it was a relatively even game. Both teams could have easily won the match. I just think maybe both teams were blowing towards the end, especially us. You could just see, you know, normal, if we were a fully strength team, you know, full fitness, hadn't just played three or four games pretty much back to back, I reckon we would have potentially won that game. But fitness wise, they were just on the backsides at the end. So we probably got what was about right, I'd say, from the game, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, like you said there, the team was a very attacking team, wasn't it? We saw sort of Hacks return into it. Obviously, we kept Vidigal, Ryan May. We had Berger. Even sort of Thompson going in a left-back is sort of, you know, can be considered a move to aid, you know, going forward more than in defence. I thought he sort of had his hands full with that Matthias Martins, didn't he? You know, the blonde-haired sort of winger for Watford. Yet, when he ever, he'd sort of create issues or look like he was causing problems and then flatter to deceive when he actually, sort of, you know, when the time come to finish a chance or you know, to deliver a good ball, that Martins seemed to fluff his lines most of the time.
Yeah, I agree. Lacking in a bit of final product, I think there. I mean, it's the first time I've seen him, so I'm not sure if that's necessarily him just being him, and that's just what he is, you know, a typical Championship player, bit of quality, but always missing that final ingredient. I'm not sure. Yeah, I think he's the one who took the shot to get the corner, which I don't actually think was a corner, if I'm honest with you. I was right in front of it, and it didn't look like a corner at the time. The highlights don't really help the situation either. But I think when you look at that goal of theirs, Dan, it was, at the time, it was very clear that he'd lost his man. And again, the good thing with highlights is you get to see it back. Now, Berger, what you don't see is that Berger, basically, when the goal goes in, he speaks to the team and clearly holds his hands up and goes, "That's my fault." And I think he was being a bit harsh on himself. Maybe as captain, he's probably feeling like he had to maybe take responsibility. He was blocked off. It was a good, again, good defensive move in a way. You know, he was blocked off. He's peeled around his man. He's managed to get the header in, and there's a pretty much a tap in on the line. You know, you can't really do an awful lot about that. But I think it was predominantly actually a good move from Watford. We managed to block a man off. We do it all the time. Every club does it. There's nothing wrong with what they did. It was actually a good move, and very much, I think, against the play at that point, against the run of play. I thought we were pretty much bossing it at that point. But like I say, I think it was just a bit of poor defending to an extent, because we can't say it was just constantly being blocked off as good play. There's an element of good play, but we've done it all season. We've conceded from set pieces all season. Now, obviously, it's not Schumacher's fault. He hasn't trained at all with these lads, really. So, I'm just going to take whatever comes this year. But, yeah, I think a goal against a run of play. But at the same time, I think we really responded well to that. Again, some good little interchange. You can see what Schumacher's teams are about. They're constantly tucking inside with the fullbacks, which scares the living daylights out of me at times. It leaves such huge gaps. But again, I think it's a balance of risk and reward at this point.
Yeah, I think. Do you think that certain players are adapting to that better than others? Like, say, Junior's come out and said how he's sort of relishing this new role he's been given, and he's been showing videos of how to use it and what to do, and he's loving it. And then, you obviously, you've got sort of Thompson on the other side was asked to do it. But obviously, he feels more natural in the midfield position, so you'd imagine it wouldn't be too much of a problem. But then it's, does he have the confidence to get up there knowing that he's also primarily a defender? And then there's also the introduction of Keanu Hoover, wasn't there, in the second half, and sort of his sort of contribution to the game. How did you think he did when he came on?
I like how you set me up there, considering my comments about him after the full time.
I knew it was something you'd probably want to get off your chest, so I thought I'd tee you up for it.
Oh, I don't know, mate. Some people will probably lose the rag. They always do, don't they? But also, in fairness, I feel like I've absolutely hammered the guy all season, if I'm honest. So it's maybe a bit of both going on here. But honestly, I think when you talk about people getting used to things, I thought Thompson did really well. He's been really good the last few games. Never looks out of place. Yeah, Keanu, we know what his frailties are. I won't go into absolute war and peace comments. I just think when we think about the final ball, you know, we've always said that what he lacked in defence, which is very, very obvious to see, he's very much made up for it at the other end of the pitch. And I just think he hasn't done that this season at all. There was, again, the highlights really don't help, but the amount of times that he got it down, you know, a bit further up, and it would be a, you know, it would be a very loose pass, or it would just only about make it to the player, which meant that he had no time to do anything with it. There was balls that were played in that never even got anywhere near a Stoke player, and you're like, what the hell did you see there? I don't know whether it's a confidence thing, whether it's a quality thing, whether it's a mixture of the two. For me, Dan, if his loan got ripped up in January, I wouldn't be shedding any tears about it. I don't know what's wrong with him. I do. An element of me thinks this would probably be a good system that suits him from an attacking standpoint, which is why it baffles me a little bit more, because we have seen how good he can be going forward, but he doesn't seem to be good at either right now. So if we can sign somebody else in January, it won't be a priority position, I don't think. But if we can sign someone in January, then I would absolutely have no issues with that at all. Yeah, and it's a shame. I do feel like I've just been at him all season. I don't like doing that with players. I've got no agenda against players. I just call what I see, and he's the one that constantly keeps catching my eye. But you could say that that's because I keep looking out for it. So it's one of them. I don't know whether I'm being, I'm seeing what I want to see, and in terms of feeling he's not been good enough this year, or seeing quality. I genuinely couldn't tell you, if I'm honest with you. But yeah, look, I think the vast majority of them have settled in well. I think one of the players actually who let me down, and this was probably surprised a few people, but let me down more than Henry did actually, and that was Haksabanovic. I mean, there was me and there was a few other people next to me and stuff like that. They were all having the same opinion. He looked lazy. People give Tyrese Campbell some stick. He was lazy for a vast majority of that game. Yeah, look, he did well. He got up the pitch for the goal. But again, if you saw the match in its entirety, the amount of times he would just stand still on the side of the pitch, that one run he made led to the goal. He didn't do that for the vast majority of the match. So he's got no excuse. Yeah, he's coming back from injury, but he's had nowhere near as many games as this lot have. So he really disappointed me, because I really like him. He should not be on the wing. It very clearly does not suit him.
One interesting thing with Hacks is that was actually the first time he's played 90 minutes for Stoke. So you think that's... When was the last time he fully did 90? Maybe that's... You know, with Finnish, you're saying like he's a... Your players who've played a lot of games and are going to be tired. Maybe he's the other end of the scale. Maybe he's lacking fitness because he's not played enough games, maybe.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's a fair point. It absolutely could be that. I think what bothered me, now, if that was in the second half of the game, then totally understand. But we're talking the first half of the match, you know, early on. He was just static on the side. Maybe that's just how he is. He'd rather, you know, try and do that and maybe cut inside, because every time he got the ball, he tried to cut inside. He never once took his man on down the left-hand side. So he's obviously confidently is not going to be in that position. Where I'd like to see him is in what we used to refer to as like the Daniel Johnson type role, you know, just behind that striker. I think that's where he really shines, because he is a creative player. He has got a good quality. And I just don't think that wing suits him. I think on reflection, I think that's probably what it was. I don't think I'm going to give him the fitness excuse on this one, just because it was in the first half. And if he can't last that long, then there's a problem. But yeah, I don't want to keep digging into it. It wasn't a really bad game at all. On another day, we win that for me. But also on another day, so do Watford. So it was a really tight affair with two tired teams, I think.
Yeah, I know you said as well, didn't you, obviously about the sending off and how it changed the game. it seemed to galvanise Watford, didn't it? It galvanised the crowd, galvanised the players. They seemed to really sort of get behind get behind each other, and then the fans really sort of pushed them on. Possibly the same that we do, you know, the fans, you maybe got your red and white tinted glasses on at certain points, and they maybe had their, you know, gold and black ones on, or a yellow and black glasses, and maybe thought, you know, that was never a red card. And all of a sudden then it's like a siege mentality for the rest of the game, isn't it? And that seemed to be what spurred them on. And we, rather than continue doing what we were doing, where we were creating chances, because we were against a man less, we seemed to start rushing everything, like as if we were panicking that, oh no, now we're playing 10 men, we've got to win. And it just seemed, we seemed to create less chances doing that than if we just, you know, stayed quite methodical.
Yeah, no, 100%, that's exactly what happened, because I think their home fans were silent until that point. Like, I mean, I know we're bad, but they were even quieter. Even the guy with the drums didn't turn up, I don't think, for half of it. They were nowhere as a crowd, I'm going to be honest. And no doubt some Watford fans will be listening to this. They always do. But honestly, I mean, our atmosphere has been poor. Theirs was just as bad. But yeah, the red card was a red card. We saw it from where we were. He's basically, I mean, Thompson rightly actually should have been pulled up for a foul, because he does block his man off. It is a free kick to Watford. And I think the fact that the referee let that go surprised me a little bit. He was a good referee, but again, that could be the red and white glasses, because he did book about 75 of their players. I think it was definitely a red card. He swung his elbow out. He's caught him in the side of the head, I think, or the side of the cheek. He can't have any complaints about being sent off. But you're right, it did galvanise them. I don't know if they thought they'd been hard done by. I didn't think they had at all. They were lucky not to get a couple of other players sent off. When that player was booked, and again, these highlights need to improve, but I was watching it back and it didn't show it. Like, there was, he was booked, he's gone to the actual referee and basically thrown the ball at the referee, and right in front of him, about six paces at the most. How he didn't get sent off again for that one, I don't know. So there's elements where they can count themselves lucky, but we didn't draw that game or, you know, drop points because of a referee. I actually thought he was a pretty decent ref. I think he let a lot go for both teams, probably let more go for us, if I'm honest with you. But still, like, it was, you're right, it was a galvanized team after that. And we were saying rushing it. I wouldn't say necessarily it felt rushed to me at the time. It more felt like, we don't know how to do this now. We don't know how to break this team down, which won't be the first time we've had that problem, let's be honest. I do think there was a large element of that. Again, a lack of quality in that final ball at times. But I do just think we were at times trying to walk the ball in. Like, there was the amount of touches we were trying to play on the edge of the box instead of just actually hitting it. I don't know, again, lack of confidence, lack of players willing to take responsibility if they miss the shot. Maybe there's an element of confidence going on there right now. They've been highly pressured from fans and alike for months and months, and maybe that's just got to them a little bit. It's hard to know, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, just rewinding slightly to the red card, I actually think it was possibly two red cards in one. You do wonder whether, is it Bayo once he got sent off? You do wonder whether he's got some sort of commitment over New Year that he needs to get to, because he first of all brought his leg right up, and he's like, you know, at a 90-degree angle, and then slammed his heel down on McNally. And the ref sort of pointed at him, didn't he? They played on. I thought, how can you say, yeah, I'll deal with that in a minute? That's a red card. And then when he didn't do that, and the referee was like, yeah, get off, carry on. He then like proceeded to sort of, like, say, get up and elbow McNally in the face. And I was thinking, what are you doing here? Why have you? It's like, you're not going to send me off for that one? Oh, well, send me off for this one then. completely lost his head. Just completely lost his head, didn't he? And I think McNally actually was, if there was a few niggly things that I picked up on during, especially during that first, towards the end of the first half, should I say. I think he, I know, not so much when he got kicked in the face, or he got shouldered in the face, didn't he? But not so much here that. I think we'll put that down to S. Housery. But I think he was just sort of winding him up a bit. And, you know, maybe it's something they picked up on. Maybe it's something that they knew was a possibility. He got a short fuse or something. But if it was, then the tactics certainly worked because he got sent off. Do you think then, well, the manager certainly thinks this because he's very refreshing to hear. He's held his hands up, Ante, and said, you know, I made a mistake. I got it wrong. You know, we lost a lot of momentum. But I'll sort of, you know, jot this down and you know, for future reference. He sort of, when he took Berger and Mai off, which I do fully understand, I've got no criticism for him. He's got so many games in such a short space of time. And you think, you know, we've got a big game against Ipswich, which we're going to get onto in a minute. The last thing he needs is Ryan Mai, who's already been out injured, Wouter Berger, who's already been out injured this season, to pull up. They played a lot of football. He's asking them to do a lot of intensity, you know, a lot of high intensity work. Do you think he was right to sub them off? Obviously, in hindsight, you can say we didn't win the game, so he should have left them on. But do you, you know, do you understand and do you agree with the decision to take them off?
For Berger, I'd say so. I think he started to disappear in that second half. And again, I think that was just the nature of being tired, if I'm honest. So I've got no issues with the Berger one. For Ryan's, again, totally understand it from a fitness perspective. I think he knows that really Ryan's probably the only player who can do what he can do at this club. Look, I wanted to see Wesley. I think Wesley has been massively underused since he's come. But at the same time, like, I don't know, it's strange for such a big guy. It feels like he's got a shocking touch. Now, whether that, again, is the lack of match fitness because he's barely played, I don't know. So I do get it because I think if you take Ryan out of this team, we're really struggling for that focal point up front. Tyrese isn't fit, clearly, still. Even now, he's not fit. So you know, we can't have this potential very good striker on his day coming back in. So he isn't going to come back. And I think Wesley very clearly probably hasn't even caught his eye yet. So he's not going to rely on him. So I think it's a good point in the sense that he'd rather rest him for Ipswich because he knows he absolutely needs him because we really are struggling without him. So I totally get it either way. Was there anyone else he could have brought on? People would say Lowe. Is that the type of game for a Nathan Lowe? I'm not quite sure. I want to see more of him because I'm desperate for the guy to do well. But I do actually think in those scenarios, maybe the experience is probably better for me, Dan. But I get totally why he did what he did. And, you know, if he goes and scores the winning goal against Ipswich, no one's going to be complaining, are they?
Yeah, whereas if he'd have left him on and the pair of them had picked up 8 to 10 week muscle injuries, then, you know, that's the next 2 months written off of the season, basically, isn't it? Because you've got your focal point up front and your engine in the midfield gone.
And actually, speaking of picking up injuries, Ben Pearson's going to be out for 3 or 4 weeks. Yeah, you saw him hamstring. You could just see as soon as he went down, he kind of like gestured to the bench. He knew he'd done something. Now, I can't say I've actually seen anything come out since, but the way in which he was gesturing looked like I pulled the hamstring in. Hopefully it's cramp or something and he's wrong, but, you know, what do you think of Ben Pearson just quickly, Dan? So I'm a massive fan of Ben Pearson. I think on his day, he's one of the best defensive midfielders in this division. I think he's struggling to get used to the Schumacher way, or whether it's just a bit of bad form. I'm not quite sure. I think Thompson's actually been better than Pearson, and I never thought I'd say that, if I'm honest with you.
Yeah, I agree. I think do you know, I say that we're obviously looking to move the ball a lot quicker, aren't we? A lot more interchanging, a lot more passing. First time passes, second time passes. And I'm not saying Ben Pearson, you know, Ben Pearson's obviously a very high quality footballer. And I think people, because he goes around kicking people up in the air, people forget how good a footballer he is with the ball at his feet. He doesn't get noticed as much, does he? He's very good at switching the play. But I think the way this manager plays, is very much more suited to how Jordan, for Jordan Thompson, his playing under Steven Schumacher, he's going to prosper far better than he was under Alex Neil. That's sort of the point I'm making. I think.
Do you think Pearson prefers a slower pace then? A bit like an Alex Neil pace?
Yeah, like a little bit more space where he's going to pick the ball up, maybe take the ball off the defence, drop in, drop 5-10 yards off the midfield, pick the ball up, have a turn and maybe look for that big diagonal ball or, pinging the ball out to the wings. And you think, is that that's not really what they're looking to do now. They're looking to play through the midfield, not sort of bypass the midfield as such. I think maybe... Is he playing with something? Like, is he playing with with a hamstring injury, a groin injury, or something that's hampering him getting around? Because we know how good a midfielder, how good he covers the ground, how alert he is to situations, and that we've seen it, haven't we, in the past? There was that time at Bristol City, wasn't there, when he off that corner, when. It was Josh Loren lost his man, didn't he? And Ben Pearson saw you highlighted it in your video you made of it, where he's seen the situation before anyone's seen the situation really, and got in there and made a goal saving challenge. So he's got that kind of ability. You just wonder, is there something stopping him playing at full tilt at the minute? Is there something physically that's holding him back? We had a situation with Lewis Baker, didn't we, last season? People giving him absolute pelters, really, digging into him. And when it come to light, he's obviously had a knee operation. He'd been carrying it for months. And that's, why he'd been playing a lot less. So it's one that interesting whether there is something like that going on or whether he's just struggling to adapt to a new way of playing. I suppose we'll find out in time, won't we?
Yeah, we will. There's definitely a good player in there. I didn't even think of it in the sense that you were talking about the pace of things. I think he would love to just sit there for the vast majority of game and not have to get involved so much in that kind of quick interchange play. And I think you're right. I think that's probably where he's struggling, because he's not going to be able to just sit there and pick people off. He's going to have to get involved and move around and stuff like that. So be interesting to see if he adapts, because I think he's going to have to adapt, or else he'll find himself, as good as he is, he'll find himself sitting on a bench for the vast majority of the season. So it's one to keep an eye on. But yeah, Jordan Thompson, mentioned it on the last pod. Really impressed with how he's been doing. Again, he's actually been doing the Pearson mould, in the sense that you don't really notice him for the vast majority of the match because he's just a steady Eddie. That's how I feel about JT at the minute. So good to see him proving a number of people wrong so far, including an element of myself as well. Because at times under Alex Neil, he looked like a lost puppy. He really did. So it's good to see him thriving.
Yeah, one last player I want to talk about just on the Watford game is Ryan Mahy. So what I think, for me personally, I think he had the best game I've seen him in a Stoke shirt. I thought he's really growing into that role now. And quite interestingly, obviously I've got my spreadsheets all with data and stuff. I think if you combine the amount of minutes he played for Stoke August to November, in December he's only 12 minutes short of that entire time. So that just shows now, isn't it? Is he getting into a groove now? Is he finally getting back-to-back-to-back matches in there where he's getting a run of games? And we always say with strikers, a lot of strikers need a run of games, don't they, to get the best form out of them. Are we now seeing the benefit of Ryan Mahy having an injury-free run where he's played just a few games in a row and we've seen glimpses of it in the first few months of the season. Now we're really getting to see it on a consistent basis. Because for me, I thought his hold-up play was fantastic. I thought how he brought others into play, his first touches, his little flicks and that. He's obviously, for me, I think if Steven Schumacher was picking a forward to play off the way he wants to play and all with runners around him, and that also, I'll let you come in a minute, but that's also a massive difference for Ryan Mahy as well. The fact he's now not just up there on his own. He spent the first few months of the season with nobody within 30 yards of him, unless Andre Vidigal was busted a gut. So when he was injured, I think he naturally saw a drop off in Mahy as well, because he had nobody getting up in and around him, did we? Lloris stays very wide a lot of the time. you know, obviously Campbell's been in and out of the team, he's not sort of had that connection with him, whereas him, Mai and Vidigal seem to hit it off straight away. Now, when ball goes up to Mai, there's people running past him, there's people running towards him, there's alongside. He's got options to, you know, he's so sort of skillful with these little, like I say, just little back heels, little flicks, just playing it into people's runs. He's a very, very good footballer for me, and I think we're now starting to get the best out of him. He's made more for this manager, definitely, in my eyes.
I don't really need to add much more to that. I think you nailed exactly where I'm coming from with him. If you look at the goal, his physicality, he holds the, you know, the defender off and nicely finishes into the bottom corner. You look at the challenge, the save rather, towards the end of the game from the keeper. You know, he's cut back inside, hit it, and the keeper saved it. Again, really good effort. We were right behind that, and there was a defender just in front, which was partly blocking the keeper's view. So you've got to give, you know, a great credit to him, because that was a great shot. And I think you are right. I'm not going to go over what you just said, because I couldn't have put it any better. But we're definitely seeing a good player in there. We can see why we've spent a bit of money on him. If we can nail this down, he's our focal point. Get players around him, whether that is the likes of Vidigal and Haksabanovic, or two other players, or, you know, Vidigal on the left and another person on the right next season, whichever way it is, I definitely agree with you. I think he's a quality player, and we are seeing the benefits of that. He's, you know what, without him in that focal area in the middle, I think we're even in a worse position than we would think, actually. I think his goal contribution, which hasn't been as many goals as he probably deserves, but his goal contribution and how he's bringing the players in, I do actually dread to think where we'd be without Ryan's contributions right now. Because I think the goals he's scored have been important goals as well. So, yeah, we should probably count ourselves lucky, because without him, we may have been in the relegation zone quite comfortably now. So, yeah, I can't wait to see what he's going to be like next season with a proper run of games. I still want to see him have a really good, you know, other half to this season. No more injuries. Just get that confidence up, get that experience up. And then next season, in theory, if we're still in the league, which I'm sure we will be, then, yeah, he's got the capability to be a great player for me. And, you know, one of those rounded players who, as we said, can hold the ball up, can have a bit of pace, bit of creativity, a bit of a good all-rounder, rather than just, say, a target man who can't do much more, which I think, unfortunately, Wesley is just a target man who can't do much more. So, yeah, I love to watch him play, and I think you're right. We're seeing the benefits now of prolonged match play.
Yeah, and I'm going to go to man of the match now. I just want to touch on something from the Watford side of things before we do. So it seems a good time to go into man of the match, because obviously it was hotly contested between Birgit and Mai. Where does your vote fall down, Mike?
I'd say Ryan, only because I think, again, we would have been nowhere without him, I think, last night. Vidigal was quite quiet. The rest of the players were very average on the whole. No one really shone in defence either. So, yeah, I think Ryan's got to have it.
Well, I'll let you know that Haksabanovic was in fifth. Joint third was Shamadou and Jordan Thompson with 6% of the vote each. And then there's a big jump, and it's really quite close. So, with 38% of the votes was Ryan Mai, and with 40% of the vote was Wouter Burger for his eighth man of the match of the season and his third in a row. So a hat-trick of Christmas man of the matches for Wouter Burger. Do you think he'd best be sticking around longer than January? We don't want nobody, let's just hold him back a bit, eh? We don't want nobody getting interested this early.
If you think about, See, that surprised me. I didn't think he was overly great against Watford. I'm not saying he's bad by any stretch of the imagination. He was pretty solid. But he didn't do anything for me that made him shine on that one. So that's interesting.
He must have got to the point now where when he has a game, because he's that, his levels are that high, you just think, it's just a standard Vaterberg again. It's just a standard Vaterberg.
Yeah, quite possibly. Like I said, he did nothing wrong for me. I just don't remember anything in the match, and I was like, "Oh, that was good." I don't remember any side of that. So, but again, like look, we can't see everything. You know, certain people will focus on certain players, and you see more than the man next to you. That happens. Like I said, me with Henry, right? I'm focusing on him for Ireland's for the game sometimes, not intentionally, but it happens. So maybe I'm not seeing elements like that. But yeah, I mean, I think it's good to see him at the top. I'm not sure if we've ever had the same man of the match three times in a row. I mean, you may even have that stat somewhere, but I can't remember three in a row.
No, I can't remember either. I don't think there are, definitely not this season anyway. There's been quite a few twos. Gucci's got two twice. I think Shamadou's got two in a row. So there's been a few twos. But yeah, I can't remember if it's at all we've had a three. But yeah, he's definitely banging form. And I think that again, player of the season wise, I mean, I haven't got the numbers exactly right in front of me. We updated on the last pod. But I think he's now streaking ahead. Obviously, helped by the fact that, you know, he's close to his person as Lloris, who's not playing at the minute, obviously with a concussion. So yeah, he's streaking away at the top of them player of the season standings. Best brush up on our Dutch. Ready for May. Just one last thing I wanted to say about Watford before we sort of move on. Now, Valerian Ismail got booked towards the end of the first half, didn't he? And the referee, I thought he did a good job. I thought he was trying, a lot of the time, he was trying to make sure that everyone knew he was in charge. Well, there was a lot of like, you know, you come to me, which I think is fair enough for an official, because it shows that, you know, they, like I say, there is a respect there, isn't it? But for me, I mean, watching Valerian Ismail when he got yellow carded, the Watford manager, there was absolutely zero respect there for the officials, and it showed because quite quickly after, I think there was two Watford players booked, and then they came out after half time. And there was another yellow card, and then there was a red. And I think, you know, he didn't do his team any help. He didn't give his team any help there because the ref went over and he sort of, you know, just beckoned him to cut. You know, the referee walked halfway and he beckoned him to come towards him, to walk towards him. And then he wouldn't. He stood there waiting for him to look at him. And he very petulantly was looking in every corner of that stadium, but directly in front of him where the referee was, with an absolute look of disdain on his face. And he was like looking down, he was looking up each corner, and he was like literally would not look at the ref. And the ref had given up in the end, just give him the yellow card. And then as he did it, he sort of growled at him, then looked at him as the card was branded, growled at him. And then as he walked off, started on the fourth official again, about to say like, maybe. And I thought to myself, you, rather than owning what you've just done, you might not agree with it, but you're showing such a lack of respect to the referee, then no wonder your team have then gone out and the referee is booking people left, right and centre because your team have got no sort of control over what's... You know, he's doing this to keep control of the match because they're going round and they've lost total respect for him. And that stems, as it does, you say things stem from captains, things stem from managers, and that's what it looked like to me. You know, he showed a complete disdain, lack of respect for him, and that's it filtered down to the players.
Yeah, I think it's a fair point. I mean, he's only human, isn't he? At the end of the day, you know, he's probably not surprising that he might hold a little bit of a grudge against them. I think they were lucky not to have another man sent off. I really do. I think how many yellows did he have? Must have had at least four yellow cards. At least four, maybe five. I'm not quite sure, but yeah, well, I don't know.
Three got booked, didn't they? The left back got booked. All three midfielders got booked. So yeah, there's four.
Yeah. So yeah, I think it's a fair point. I think they were yellow cards as well. I mean, it's easy for us to do this, right? Because Watford fans, I know their reaction afterwards was, "He was the worst referee." Blah blah blah. Maybe because we're on the, you know, which had the positive receiving end this time, that maybe we are a bit blinkered in that scenario. But yeah, I think it's fair enough. Just, you know, if you're going to mouth off, take a yellow card and get on with it. I don't know what the solution is. I think it will always be the case. There'll always be managers, there'll always be players who don't like referees, don't agree with decisions, and they'll kick off about it. But as you said, to their own detriment, it wouldn't surprise me if it happens another million times, Dan.
Yeah, for sure. Going to sort of news bits now. Before we do that, out of courtesy, Mark, is there anything else you want to add about the Watford game?
No, not really. I think it was probably a fair result in the end. Would have been nice to get 3 points, because going into Ipswich, that would have been incredible. I mean, Ipswich are faltering, as we'll get on to. But yeah, I think 1-1 in the end, despite not wanting to be the result, was very much the correct result, I think. Now, somebody messaged us, Dan, and said, who got 1-1? Because somebody got 1-1 on the pod. Was it you, or me? Was it Mr. Graham McGarry?
I was the only one who didn't go for a Stoke win.
Okay. There we go.
Nice to see that people are taking interest in my fight to come back and win this Predictor League. Right, so let's get into a bit of news then. So there's only one real piece of news that I picked up on. It's good news that Gabriel Kelly, which is a 17-year-old midfielder, signed from Manchester City a while back. He's played for the under-18s. He's played for the under-21s. I think he started he's played a few times for the under-21s recently. He has signed his first professional contract. So Stoke gave him a 2.5-year deal. So they've obviously got a lot of faith in Mr. Kelly there. And yes, it's promising signs. That's another one of the young lads from the academy signed up for the future, Mike. So yeah, they've nailed him down to a pro deal. They must have some high hopes for him.
Yeah, I must admit, I've got to say, I don't think any of us have really ever seen him play. Certainly can't be many people who've seen him play. So yeah, we'll see how it pans out. We know there's a long, long way to go. We're yet to see how, you know, should we approaches the youth team, you know, youth teams and stuff like that. Are we going to see an influx of younger players, or is he going to be favouring experience over youth? I think we'll have to wait and see on that one.
Indeed. Right, let's get into Ipswich at home on New Year's Day.
And there it is, that's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van, unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
So, we have played Ipswich on 79 occasions. We have 29 wins, 21 draws and 29 defeats. Nice symmetry there. At home, we've played them 39 times with 18 wins, 12 draws and 9 defeats. Now, defeat in August at Portman Road was the first loss in 9 matches versus Ipswich, dating back to December 2004. How about this though, Mike? The last time that one club did the double in these corresponding fixtures was 1987-88, when Ipswich won 2-0 at home in August before beating Stoke 2-1 at Stoke on New Year's Day.
Oh, okay.
So right, Ipswich beat us 2-0 at their place in August this year. Let's hope that we're not sort of back here discussing a 2-1 defeat on New Year's Day. Stoke's home record. So we are 18th in the home table with 15 points, although we have no win in 5 at home. Ipswich's away record has them second in the away table with 24 points. The last 6 away games, though, they've won 2, drew 2 and lost 2. So they're getting a bit inconsistent away from home. Last five matches. Now, this might surprise you, Mike. The last five matches in the form table, Stoke have 7 points and are 10th with no defeat in the last five matches. Ipswich only have 6 points and are 15th in the form table with no win in their last four. So, yes, Stoke actually ahead of Ipswich in the form table. Not very often been able to say that this season, have we?
No. They feel like they're really faltering. I know we'll get into it. But, yeah, that does surprise me a bit.
So, Schumacher versus Ipswich. He's managed even against them four times. He has one win, one draw and two defeats. The only home game, though, out of those four was his solitary win when he beat them 2-1 in September 2022. As Plymouth manager. Obviously, the record between Stephen Schumacher and McKenna is exactly the same as above. And McKenna's record against Stoke is one game, one victory, which was the game at Portman Road in August. So we mentioned that Ipswich won 2-0. They also have four wins from four games, though, when he was Man United's under-18s head coach against Stoke's under-18s. So just add those into the mix. Stoke's keepers have saved 72.9% of shots, which is the fourth highest in the league. Very different to what we were considering the last couple of years when we were down the bottom of them tables. Ipswich, though, have saved just 63.6%, which actually has them 20th in that table. So the goalkeepers, when they concede shots, maybe they are good chances that they are conceding. Ipswich have conceded four own goals this season, which is twice as many as any other side. We've just had the one, which was the hamstrung Ben Pearson at QPR. Nobody has more assists this season than Ipswich's Leif Davis with 9. However, we'll get on to Leif Davis in a minute. He missed their last game against QPR with an injury. So with this game coming hot on the heels of that just 3 days later, I would say it's probably unlikely he's going to feature, you know, if he wasn't even good enough, fit enough to be on the bench. Connor Chaplin has had 85 shots, which is the second most of any player in the league this season. Kieran McKenna as well. On the other hand, for him, only once in his managerial career has he gone five games without a win, which was in April 2022. The last season, after Boxing Day, Ipswich went four games without a win. Now, you consider the way he plays, you consider how high intensity they are and also the small squad and little rotation that they don't really get to do. We mentioned it, they've got one, they don't use that many players, etc. It's funny because is this now, like, does it become a trace? Because obviously they're in poor form. Now, when there's a lot of games, they were in poor form. Previously, last season, around the same time when the games are thick and fast, is it something that Stoke can take advantage of? So is that something, isn't it? James Bell, 15, he's the referee on New Year's Day. 15 games he's ref this season, 58 yellows, 3 reds, 2 penalties, 12 home wins, no draws and 3 away wins. He's ref Stoke on 3 occasions, given us 12 yellows, no reds, no penalties, 1 win and 2 defeats. He ref the 1-0 home win against Watford in August, but also he was the referee when we lost to Southampton this season. In those two games, by the way, he's given us 9 yellows and only 2 to the opposition. So just to watch that. But if you remember, that Southampton game did get quite heated, didn't it, after the free kick was awarded that they then stuck in the top corner. So he didn't have great memories of that one. Refereeing Ipswich, he's refed them on 2 occasions, giving them just 2 yellows, no reds, no penalties, 0 wins, 1 draw and 2 defeats. But the last time he did ref them was a 2-0 loss away at Barrow in the FA Cup in December 2021. The three games he has refed them and they've not managed to score in any of them. How about this? This is very typical Stoke. He's reffed 11 championship games this season. 10 of them have been home wins, Mike. So 10 home wins out of 11 games. The one game that wasn't a home win is the aforementioned game when Southampton came to Stoke and won. The only match he's reffed this season in the championship where there hasn't been a home win was involving Stoke.
Of course it was.
Even though he's only reffed Stoke 3 times, he's only given Wigan more yellow cards than he has Stoke in his refereeing career. So he's given them 17 yellows as well. So yeah,
Ben Pearce should count himself lucky that he's not playing.
That's your ref. Those are your stats. Let's listen to Graham McGarry, and then we will discuss Ipswich Town.
Well, hello there, you Potter's predictors. It's a happy new year from myself, Graham McGarry, to all you red and whites. And let's hope these last couple of games are a signal of better times to come as you follow your team both home and away. Excellent results have given you 4 points out of the last two games under Stephen Schumacher, and now confidence must be growing within the squad to go on for a better second half of the season. Well, they're playing Ipswich Town, who's taken the championship by storm, but they just had a wobble this last couple of weeks, and it could be, as they say in football, the right time to play them. Not many people will be making Stoke the favourites, but you Potters fans will certainly have them favourites to win it, and I'm going with you as well. Stoke City 2, Ipswich Town 1.
Cheers for that, Graham. Yes, Mike, so I've sort of mentioned there, Leith Davies, he's massively influential for them, creates so many chances, so all the assists and everything. But I doubt he's going to be playing. He didn't manage to get in the squad for the game at the weekend. I don't think you'll see him, on Monday. There's also illness in the camp, which apparently ruled a couple of players out of the game on Friday. And also George Hurst, who's obviously been one of the key men for them up front, he's going to be out for what's described as a long time with a hamstring injury. So the injuries are starting to mount for a lot of clubs. I mean, we've got our own, but the injuries, illnesses, a lot of stuff starting to come into play now, isn't it, with the championship?
Yeah, it is. And like you said, I'll hold my hands over it. Ipswich have proved me wrong by a long way this season. I generally did not think they were going to keep it going as long as they have done. So if they're only starting to falter now at, 25 games in, then all credit to them, because clearly they played pretty brilliantly for most of the season. So I think the one thing you can say about Ipswich, really, is that if you look at that, they do concede goals. That's the one thing you can say. If you look at the actual table, they've conceded 33 goals this season. Now, only Hull in sixth have got 33 goals conceded. And then you have to go down to Middlesbrough in ninth, who've conceded 36. So if you look across the actual division, there's teams who are much further down who have conceded less. The one thing that's helped them is that from goals actually scored, obviously Leicester are Leicester. They are pretty damn good. We all know that. But they still scored 48 goals. Now, if you go actually throughout the whole division, I don't think there's a single team who has scored more goals than Ipswich other than Leicester. So, they've got a lot of firepower. Yes, they are faltering, probably down to the lack of, again, rotation, but we're also going to be in a similar situation where we're going to have to rotate a few players, I think. So I guess it depends on the rotation for both sides, who's got that little bit more quality when it comes to the rotation. I mean, you've got to give Ipswich credit. I don't think anyone would have had Ipswich in second. I imagine most Ipswich supporters wouldn't have had them in second at this point. They need to be a bit careful. I think Southampton have picked up a lot of form coming into the last, 4 or 5 games. They look like they're scoring for fun. So where Ipswich are faltering, Southampton now, maybe with a bigger squad, are starting to benefit from that. So what a team I thought they were going to run away with it with Leicester, just a little bit now, points are starting to kind of creep up. I think, is it like 3 points in it between Ipswich and Southampton? Now, don't get me wrong, Dan. I mean, playoffs. If Ipswich got playoffs, I'm sure they would have taken that before the start of the season. But it'll probably feel like a bit of a disappointment for them now, actually. So, I think it's going to be an incredibly close game. I do think it's going to make a big difference on who scores first. I really do. If they score first, I'd be concerned. But I don't think they're a team who are going to come here and sit back. Normally, I'd say, they'll go 1-0 up and sit back. Most teams do in the 3-6-5. But I don't think that's the McKenna way. I think he'll want them to keep up that momentum, and I think they'll want them to go and score 2 or 3 if they go 1-0 up. So whether that will play into our hands or whether our lack of fitness will not allow us to capitalise, I'm really unsure on which way this one's going to go. Also, we'll say for no doubt the Ipswich person who was listening earlier on the season that slated me because I slated Ipswich. Luke surprised me, and it's nice to see someone else, you know, coming up from the division and going again. So, but I do think they will falter. I'll still stand by my commitment from earlier on this season. I think Southampton will now take over that second spot.
Yeah, you mentioned that about our sort of fitness levels and, you know, maybe a lack of fitness or fatigue coming in. The thing is, we've got players, we've used more players than anyone else in the division this season. And, you know, it's 8 or 9 players. That's a massive difference, the amount of players we've used against the amount of players that Ipswich have used. And you think that they're quite close-knit. When they do get a few injuries, there's not the players to turn to, is there? I mean, if they are bringing people in out the cold who haven't played all this season, that's not going to be great. And I think as well that, I mean, I sort of said it in the group just a couple of weeks ago, it's easy playing this free-flowing football. They're scoring lots of goals and conceding, and they're scoring loads, and that's it. And then they've got him up in second, and it's cut to going, and they've got a bit of a juggernaut going. They've carried the momentum from last season, the feel-good factor. Now, they're in with, no offence to it, but they're in with the big boys. Southampton, Leeds are chasing them down. They had an 11-point gap, I believe. It might have been slightly less. I'm sure it's about 11 points. They were clear of third at 1 point. And now that's down to 2. It's down to 2 points. Leeds have faltered a bit, but they are still, you know, snapping around just behind Southampton. And for the first time on New Year's Day, they're going to go, for the first time in a long time, since the league table probably mattered, because it doesn't early on the season, does it? They're going to go into a game on New Year's Day knowing that if they don't win, they might not be in the top two, you know, come the end of the game when the results come in from the Southampton. And to think that, you know, that then is a lot of pressure to think how far ahead they were. And at the start of the season, there was no pressure on Ipswich to go up. You know, it would have been just to stay up. But through their fantastic play and the results that they've got and, you know, the great work, they've manufactured now this position where there is pressure on them to stay up with teams they really shouldn't be staying up with. And it's whether them players have got the belief. And like I'm saying, for a team that relies on scoring a lot of goals, all of a sudden those goals can dry up, because when you feel nervous, when you've got that sort of understanding of the importance of you know, taking a chance when it comes to you, they maybe start snatching at chances. So then if you start snatching at chances and they're only scoring 1 a game instead of 3, then 3-2 wins are now 2-1 defeats. And that'll quickly snowball, because the more you do that, the more pressure then when you do get a chance, the more pressure. And then the last, you know, the more likelihood of you missing the following chance and the following chance. So I'm not saying Ipswich are doomed to the playoffs or whatever, but I think they'll do very well to stay in touch with Southampton as the season goes on now, both due to squad depth and also, like I say, the way they play, it's going to take real mentally strong strikers to continue to find the net, you know, as often as they are doing when push comes to shove towards the end of the season.
Yeah, fair point. Like I say, I think they're going to be in trouble in the fact that Southampton will think of what won 4 out of their last 5 games, and they've obviously drawn 3 and lost 1 out of their last 4 games as well. So yeah, I think they are susceptible conceding goals. We've said that they may score as well against us. I'd be surprised if they don't. I mean, my prediction is to go for another 1-1 draw. If I'm honest with you, I still think that would be a decent enough return. I'm not sure what our record is on New Year's Day, actually. I think probably find that one, or that might be in your magic book. I'm not quite sure, but yeah, I would say a point would be a fair result, because Ipswich is still a good team. And like I said, I think the rotation that we're going to have to make as well is going to weaken us. I know we can say we've got more players and stuff to come in. How many of them you would choose to have in at this point for 90 minutes, I'm not sure. But for me, yeah, I think they're a good team. They're a team that are faltering. There's always one team at least that ends up faltering the further they get into the season, and maybe that's the reason why, because of lack of rotation. But I mean, Dan, I'll just give you my team if you don't mind. Now this is really difficult for me because I think we do need to rotate. Now obviously Pearson's going to be out, which obviously begs the question: who can come into that defensive midfield space or alongside the likes of Berger? I think we're really struggling there because I think Thompson's going to have to play left back again. I don't know what's happened to Stevens. I mean, you hear nothing about it. Ben Wilmot, as much as I'd love him to, you know, maybe come in and maybe even slot into the right back space so that Junior can move across to the left. Oh, I think it's really tricky. So I'm going to have to go for Baker, I think, in that defensive mid spot with Berger. I don't think that's Baker's best position by a long shot, to be honest with you. I think that's probably not the best place for him. But unless anyone else comes to mind for you, I'm struggling to see who else we can get in that defensive midfield spot. Unless, again, Stevens is back, which allows Thompson to go in. But there's no signs of him being back, is there?
No. I've got Hoover at left back, or Junior at left back, Hoover at right back, just to allow Thompson to go into midfield. Obviously, Bonham.
But yeah, fair enough.
McNally, Rose, then say Junior and Kiana. Thompson in midfield, Berger, Baker is in front of him, so I am bringing Baker in. Just as in John Ho's played a lot of minutes, I think he will look to sort of rest him. He's not scared of making early subs, is he? So I think that the opportunity arises, he'll, you know, be more than happy to bring Bay on for Baker, you know, half time, just after half time. It's interesting though, where do we go with to keep like the wide men, like Haksabanovic? Lloris obviously is unavailable. You know, is Haksabanovic going to play another game? Vidigal has played a lot recently. We're actually quite on width options. We're quite sort of low, aren't we, in you know, possibility of who we can put out there. I think he may just have to start with. Sorry?
Do you think he might play Jojic?
I don't know.
It'd be a big ask, because he couldn't have seen him very much, could he?
No, he has scored a lot of goals for the under-23s there, you know. He's done really well for them. Scored a lot. I wonder whether you'll see Daniel Johnson on the left wing.
No, not again. A guy can barely play in any position, never mind left wing. Jesus Christ. Sorry, mate. He's not good this season. He really isn't.
I think you might see Johnson starting in Vidigal. I think then that leaves you Haksabanovic and Bay to come off the bench to, as you sort of game-changing subs, aren't they? Your creative subs to come on. But yeah, we are sort of losing a lot of, you know, sort of what, you know, what we've got there. And we think, you know, as long as we're in the game after an hour, we might bring them two on. But yeah, like I say, what you don't want, say Vidigal's another one, and he's, you know, prone to picking up muscle injuries, it seems, so far in his, you know, short stoke career. He's had a couple. So you don't want to be sort of, you know, overplaying him, but needs must. I mean, they've got 2 weeks, don't they, really, basically? Or is it 12 days till the next league game after this one? They've obviously just got the cup game against Brighton. So yeah, well, we shall see. I mean, who's your front three?
So, yeah, I, you know what, I've kept Juno in mind. I get your point totally on why you would rest him a little bit, but now we've mentioned, I'd say Haksabanovic is going to stay in the team, just because I think he probably needs more game time than most of them, if I'm honest. So I think he needs to stay in there. Vidigal will stay in there because, again, he gives us some more natural width, and he is a creative player. So Juno stays there, and obviously Ryan up front is that number nine or whatever, that focal point. So he will play there for me. I do think that we will see Jojic through the game. He's clearly on the bench for a reason. I don't think that reason would have changed because we've not got a ruck of players coming back. The only way that I think that he does not go on the bench is if Tyrese is back. But again, it doesn't sound like he is. I asked somebody, how, you know, when's he going to be back? And I think the answer was the end of January. So we never really hear anything about the injuries, do we, these days? But clearly Tyrese doesn't sound like he's even close to coming back. So, I do think we're going to see him for you youth. I don't think he's going to want to make too many changes, but I'm going to go for that. I'm going to go Thompson at left back, Junior at the right, McNally and Rose, Baker and Berg on the two older midfielders, and then Haksabanovic, Juno, Vidigal and May. I think that's going to be the team for me. And you just expect to see all five subs being used throughout the game, 100%.
Yeah, sounds good to me. Anything else you want to add?
No, nothing to add. I'm going to go for a draw. I'm going to go for the 1-1, I think.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go for 2-2. There'll be a few goals. Have you got me a who am I to round us off, Mike?
Absolutely not, no.
Oh, here's one I prepared earlier for you.
Oh, what a shock.
So, I was born in Aghagalan on 17th of August, 1987.
Sorry, you were born where?
Aghagalan.
I've never heard of it.
Neither would I. I thought it was fun to attack you in there. Sounded great. I spent 4 years in the Man United Academy as a teenager. No?
Fletcher?
Not quite. I made 146 appearances for Stoke between 2010 and 2016.
2010 and 2016. Ooh. No, not yet.
No. Number four, I created a furore when, after playing for Northern Ireland up to under 15 level, I then switched allegiance to play for the Republic of Ireland and went on to earn 25 caps.
I feel like I should know this now. Oh, can't be Mark Wilson, can it?
It is indeed Mark Wilson.
Oh, yes. I was trying to think for a second. And did he play for United? Yeah, he was the United Academy. I was trying to think then, but yeah, Mark Wilson.
I think you would have got it off the last one, which was I signed for Stoke on deadline day 2010 in a deal that saw Liam Lawrence and David Kitson go the other way to Portsmouth.
Right,
I think that wraps it all up, doesn't it?
It does, and I mean, hopefully everyone's not sick to the back teeth of us, to be honest, because me and Dan were looking at this, and the new manager is also adding to our podcast extensive library. I mean, we've done 11 podcasts in December. We're all podcast out a little bit, I think. But yeah, thanks for sticking with us. Probably the most we've ever done in 1 month. But yeah, I don't know about you, Dan, but I think I'm done for podcasts for at least a week.
Yes, I think we were looking at it. There's only four. I think if you count Good Friday's game as a weekend, there's only four games now between now and the end of the season currently that are like midweek. So you're probably going to hear us a lot less, I'd say, probably one a week mainly.
Yeah, exactly. And for anyone who's relatively new, because I know there's a lot of you are, I mean, we always obviously release Friday 6 a.m. typically is kind of when it goes out. If there's a midweek match, there's normally one on a Monday, again, same time. So we don't really change the schedule unless, obviously, like this Christmas period, you're kind of forced to. But yeah, like I said, thanks everyone for sticking with us. One thing we never do, by the way, is that push our Facebook page and Twitter pages and stuff like that. So we're obviously on Facebook. So if you just search for Every Step Along the Way, you can join quite a big community now on there. Every single week, we're getting 30, 40, 50 a week, and we never mention it. So thanks for the word of mouth going on there, and obviously on Twitter and whatnot, as always. So just thanks to me for everyone who's listened this year. It's been probably year-on-year growth every single time that we've had. So yeah, just a thanks for me. Everyone, obviously, enjoy the new year. Are you doing anything for New Year's, Dan, or are you a bit like me, just, you know, drink, TV, and that's it, and I've done?
A bit boring. I don't get New Year. I don't get the big thing about it. I'm boring.
No, I don't. It doesn't interest me. I know some people live for it, but no, for me, it can just pass me by, that one.
Aye. Well, yes, thank you for everyone for everything in 2023, and we shall see you in 2024.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.